Welcome to the Auto Trader and Kelly Blue Book Sales Day call. My name is Eric, and I'll be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, please press star then 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Michelle Behar. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for joining this month's Auto Trader and Kelly Blue Book Sales Day conference call. Both Alec Gutierrez, Senior Analyst for Kelly Blue Book, and Michelle Krebs, Executive Analyst for Auto Trader, will be speaking today on August 2017 results, followed by a Q&A session. Cox Automotive's Chief Economist, Jonathan Smoke, also will provide an overview of Hurricane Harvey's impact on the industry. First, we will have Jonathan Smoke.
Thank you, Michelle. First, let me say that our hearts go out to the people of Houston and all of those that have been impacted by the weather this week. We have over 600 Cox Automotive team members in Houston and many more in other areas in the storm's path. Economists like me get a bad rap that we're the dismal scientists, but this week especially, we didn't lose sight of colleagues, friends, and family who are dealing with a difficult time. By the way, I am a Longhorn, and as we say in Longhorn Nation, Texas fight, so we're with you. As many of you may have seen, we've estimated that 300,000 to 500,000 vehicles were likely severely damaged or lost in the Houston DMA alone. We base that number on the size of the Houston DMA, which is the seventh largest in the country by population and eighth largest for vehicles in operation at 5.6 million vehicles. We reviewed prior damage numbers and rates experienced in both Katrina and Sandy, which were the most comparable storms. We looked at the reporting of widespread flooding, which more resembled Katrina than Sandy, and we took into account the high vehicle density and the dependency on vehicles in Houston. Households there average 1.8 vehicles, and there is a more than 94% vehicle ownership rate, one of the highest in the country. Therefore, we concluded that 500,000 was entirely possible. If we're correct, it would be the worst in terms of vehicle damage in history. Sandy impacted a bigger market, but the damage was not as severe, and the vehicle density was lower. Katrina had even more severe damage, but in a less populated, less vehicle dense, and smaller area. Now we can expand on our estimates by putting a dollar figure to the damage volume. We think the automotive damage alone, in terms of value of the vehicles impacted, would be between $2.7 and $4.9 billion. Alec will discuss our SAR estimates and revisions we made for August, but let's take a moment to discuss our full-year forecast. We've had a full-year forecast range of 16.8 to 17.3 million units. Our single-point estimate has been at 17.1 million. June and July sales declines, particularly in fleet, were influencing our point model down to 16.9. But now that we're making adjustments for Harvey, we think we are back on track for 17.1. So in essence, Harvey will be net positive to the trend we have been seeing, but we remain confident with our prior forecast of 17.1 for the year. The fundamentals for demand remain strong. The economy has low unemployment and continues to see positive and strong job growth. August numbers this morning were disappointing for employment, but large enough to keep consumer confidence and spending strong. Wages are continuing to beat inflation, which is helping drive solid consumer spending, not just on autos, but in other areas as well. Inflation has been trending lower, which means rising interest rates become less of a risk through year-end. Harvey will not detract from economic growth and fundamentals for automotive if we look beyond August. In fact, following most hurricane disasters, especially in the directly affected markets, employment and GDP normally increase as rebuilding efforts effectively look like fiscal infrastructure stimulus combined with abnormal consumer spending to replace damaged goods. We expect the recovery in vehicle sales to be quick. New vehicle sales jumped 49% in the New York DMA in the month immediately following Sandy. People need transportation to get their lives back in order, and in Houston, that transportation is an automobile. We will be watching very carefully to look for updates from us on leading indicators of movement. We have plenty of new vehicle supply, and thanks to large volumes of vehicles coming off lease as well, consumers needing replacement vehicles can choose between new and nearly new. Remember that a disaster not only boosts demand from the replacements needed, but it also subtracts from supply. We think supplies from other parts of the country will be moved to the storm-affected area rapidly, so the supply and demand shift should be visible throughout the country in stable to higher vehicle prices in the months to come. Before I hand it over to Alec to talk specifics for August, let me quote the great American philosopher Kanye West. Now, that don't kill me can only make me stronger. All right, Alec, the mic is yours.
Thanks, Jonathan, and thanks, everyone, for joining the call. As Jonathan pointed out, this is a devastating storm that has certainly disrupted sales in the Houston area and other parts of the Southwest. So as we looked at the numbers coming in, we certainly had an expectation of declining sales and certainly challenges for folks that were potentially in market before the storm set in. As we released our forecast looking at the month of August prior to the storm, we had anticipated about 16.6 million units in terms of SAR for the month of August, which equated to about a 1.5% increase in overall sales volume. That was including one additional sales day this month versus August of 2016. But ultimately, as we saw the storm unfold and roll in and started to understand the potential impact of what was unfolding before our very eyes, we revised our forecast down to 16.3 million SAR, or about a 0.5% decrease. Now that we've seen the final numbers from most of the major manufacturers, we now believe that we're on pace to finish the month at 16.2 million SAR, or approximately a 1% decline in overall sales volume. Now, while the overall performance was still generally in line with what we've seen over the past several months, and as Jonathan pointed out, on the year, we still generally remain on target for our current forecast of 17.1 million units overall. Part of the growth for some of our stronger performers, such as GM and Ford to an extent, were largely driven by larger than expected increases in fleet sales, and specifically sales into rental. Now, rental sales and fleet sales in general, as we all know, are generally somewhat unpredictable. So that's not something we can necessarily count on in the months ahead. But as Jonathan pointed out, as folks that were impacted and lost their vehicles in the areas devastated by Harvey look to get out and replace those cars, there will likely be an increase in sales in the months to come. So we'll be keeping an eye on that as we're tracking the market for the next several months. As we look to some of the other macro indicators, some of the financial indicators in particular with respect to automotive sales, the numbers are still very positive. From an ATP perspective, we saw average transaction prices hit about $34,600 on average per vehicle in the month of August. This was only about a 0.5% increase versus what we saw at this time last year, a trend that speaks to the fact that average transaction prices are starting to stabilize, especially as the overall mix in segment sales stabilizes as well. A large driver to the rapid increase in transaction prices that we've seen over the last several years has in a lot of ways been influenced by the steep and rapid increase in market share for SUVs and full-size pickup trucks, which generally carry a stronger transaction price versus small and mid-sized sedans, coupled with the decline in those same sales in mid-sized sedans and compact cars. What we're seeing now, though, is that mix is beginning to stabilize. Sedan declines are leveling off. The increase in small SUVs, which are now only up about 2% so far this year, is showing that we should see greater stability in transaction prices in the months to come. In terms of incentive spend, that is up slightly. In fact, we're looking at about $3,500 per unit overall. This is up from approximately $3,300 to $3,400 per unit overall a year ago. So at this stage, Incentives are continuing to increase at a faster pace than overall transaction prices. However, that trend too is beginning to stabilize and level off. As we look across the manufacturers once again, the numbers were relatively strong overall. GM put in a very, very strong improvement in terms of those that missed the overall forecast. Again, another one driven in part due to fleet and rental sales. But FCA missed the mark by about 10,000 units compared to our forecast. But again, similar to GM, just on the opposite end of the spectrum, they actually cut fleet and rental sales, which was part of that driver. So as we look ahead, we'll certainly be keeping an eye on the recovery in the Southwest and in Houston as we look to put a number on what we expect in October and beyond. But it will take some time for us to certainly understand the full impact and take that into account into our future forecasts. And with that, I'll turn it over to Michelle Krebs for additional analysis and insights.
Thank you, Alec. I'm going to keep this short because I think there's a lot of questions. But as Alec said, it was kind of a mixed result of automakers based on our forecast. As he said, General Motors did much better than we anticipated, even our pre-Harvey forecast. Ford did a little bit better. FCA and Nissan underperformed. Honda was a bit under, but Toyota was spot on. So just running through some highlights. General Motors, in addition to, they had told us ahead of time they'd have highly daily rental sales this month, August and September, but they really knocked it out of the park with their sport utilities and crossovers. GM's rolling out four new ones this year, and those couldn't be more perfectly timed. They're going right into the segments that are in high demand. Ford's strength was largely from a huge gain in the Ford F-150, up 15%. Ford is selling down its 2017 model, launching the new one that has a little bit of freshening design-wise, but has some significant powertrain improvements. Doesn't appear to us to be incentive-driven because they've remained relatively steady on F-150 incentives. There are some special lease deals in the western regions over the weekend. Fiat Chrysler is all about Jeep and Ram, and when they're down, so is all of Fiat Chrysler, in addition to the lowering of daily rental sales. Jeep and Ram are Fiat Chrysler, and I suspect that Fiat Chrysler, they're saying, can't wait for Jeep to get through this transition of old products to new. And Toyota, an amazing story. The RAV4 sold a dazzling 43,000 units. It clearly came out of the hides of Honda, Ford, and Nissan. We did a little looking. Ford sold 44,000 total cars, and that compared to 43,000 RAV4s. That's more than Buick and Cadillac combined. That's more than Ram. It's quite an amazing feat. My hunch is Toyota is determined to have the top-selling non-pickup truck vehicle, and if it's not going to be the Camry, then it's going to be the RAV4. With that, let's open it to questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you'd like to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star one. And our first question comes from Chris Woodyard from USA Today. Chris, your line is now open.
Hey, Chris. Yes, hi, good morning. Wondering, when do you expect the bulk of those post-hurricane sales to occur? And is there any sense of what the mix will be between new and, as you pointed out, nearly new? Will they tend to gravitate more to fresh used cars more so than new car sales?
Yeah, I can speak to the patterns that we've studied in the prior storms, and they indicate that the response is pretty rapid. As I mentioned in New York, sales spiked in November when Hurricane Sandy impacted basically at the very end of October. So within a few days, within a few weeks, and we're already starting to see some reporting about dealers that are able to get back into a business selling vehicles pretty rapidly. Looking at the sales numbers for both new and used in the prior storms, it typically is over a 2 to 3 month span, and then the trends kind of revert back to a normal level of activity. So it's pretty immediate on the vehicle side. There are a lot of factors that influence exactly what the shift, the composition of vehicles purchased could be. For example, to what extent are the damaged vehicles with motorists who actually have insurance coverage and they have full comprehensive coverage that covers the flooding type damage? And then also, is there available supply? So if you think back to when Sandy impacted New York, more of that ended up into new vehicle sales because at that time there weren't very many used, relatively new vehicles because we were coming out of the Great Recession and the lowest vehicle production period. So the lowest number of vehicles from the years 2009 to 2011 pushed people a bit more towards new. So roughly speaking, we think that the number, when you take all those things into account, the level of insurance, the type of vehicles being destroyed, and the amount that needs to be replaced and what might be on the market, it's likely to be somewhere in the ballpark of 30 to 40%. Or that's for new vehicles, the remainder being used or not replaced at all. And that's the basis for the change we made or the assumptions we're making for how that's going to impact new vehicle sales through the end of the year.
30 to 40% new, the rest of them being used?
Mainly, yes. There is a little bit of loss because some of the vehicles, when you look at the distribution and you're considering, you know, some of the vehicles being lost in Houston are 20-year-old vehicles with no insurance coverage. We won't likely see an immediate replacement for those.
Good. And this is Jonathan talking, right?
That's correct.
Excellent. Thank you.
And our next question comes from Deanne Durbin from Associated Press. Deanne, your line is now open.
Hi, guys. I'm very sorry that I missed the very beginning of the call, and I didn't know if you had issued any sort of forecast on the total number of vehicles in Houston that we're talking about. You know, when we see these sales, you know, do you have any idea of how many vehicles affected, or the sales, you know, the total sales that we're going to see in, you know, next month and in the next 2 or 3 months due to this?
Yes, we did. We basically put out an estimate that we think in the Houston market alone, it's approximately 300,000 to 500,000 vehicles that will be in need of replacement. So it relates to the question that we just walked through on the math on how that will end up in new or used. We also put a dollar figure on that and estimated, based on looking at the vehicles and their current values in Houston, it would translate into a loss of between $2.7 billion and $4.9 billion.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And our next question comes from Brent Snavely from Detroit Free Press. Brent, your line is now open.
Hi, thanks.
Hey, Brent. It's Michelle, hey. Your last sales day.
Yeah, yes, indeed. I'll be watching and listening in the future, perhaps, but I guess not writing. So perfect segue here. I wanted to understand that number better, the 2.7 to 4.9 billion and the 300 to 500,000. Those are, if I understand right, that would be all damaged vehicles, so it would be vehicles on dealer lots and those personally owned by people. Is that, do I get that right?
That's a great question. It is basically based on the vehicles in operation, so it's technically the licensed and operating vehicles at the time of the storm. So it would not include brand new inventory sitting on dealer's lots. A tiny fraction relates to what, you know, we call program cars, but that's a very small number. It's less than half of 1%. But it also includes fleet in the market that could be damaged, both in terms of government, commercial, and rental fleet.
All right, thanks. And then, so kind of a similar question with the 2.7 to 4.9 billion. that is, that's not then like industry losses. That's personal property loss,
that's right.
Primarily. Okay.
That's the straight dollar loss of the vehicles, and the way we calculated that was we assumed the damage would be equally distributed across the actual vehicles in operation, which of course is a big assumption to make, but without further input, it's the most rational assumption to apply. And then we took the most recent Kelley Blue Book values to assign to those vehicles by model year, and that's where the dollar estimate comes from.
Okay. And then my final sort of clarification, I guess, you know, based on how fast, I mean, you were saying it looks like the sales will begin to bounce back very quickly. So, you know, so for the month of September, it sounds like you would actually be expecting the impact of Harvey to be a upward or positive sales impact, not a negative.
That's right. Assuming that the problems from the flooding and other things don't continue to wreak havoc for further days and further weeks, mm-hmm. if it's similar to prior disasters, the vehicle component bounces back the most quickly out of the activity.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And our next question comes from Rye Drewson from San Antonio Express. Rye, your line is now open.
Hey, everybody. Good to talk to you all. I know it's been quite the week, and I can imagine you've been poring over a lot of numbers. I'm wondering, you know, what do you think, and I apologize if this has been asked already, but what do you think the effect's going to be on, say, especially the truck segment, truck SUV segment? I know we saw all those vehicles that were flooded, but I don't know if you have an idea as to how, you know, if you have any ideas to what the breakdown may be on those, of what types got flooded, but also if you have any estimates of, like, fleets that need to be replaced or things like that.
We don't have a specific estimate of truck vehicles. It is a truck-dominant market. It's one of the highest concentration of trucks and SUVs in the country. I think it ranked number 3 for the Ford F-150 in particular. So we would expect replacements to follow that suit, again, if you make the assumption that damage follows the distribution of the actual vehicles in operation there.
And do you think, is that going to be based more on individual purchases, fleet purchases, a mix of both?
Oh, it's far more influenced by the personal. The fleet number was less than 5% of that operation, so you know it's a tiny fraction of all of these vehicles that are damaged.
And then also, you know, I'm just wondering, for the short term, you know, we're seeing gas supply disruptions up and down Texas that really seemed to hit the fan yesterday, and maybe continuing into this morning. I'm wondering what, if any, effect you think that may have on the Texas market, if you can speak to that specifically, but also just the overall market, any gas disruptions across the country.
Yeah, that's a great question. I would identify the potential and how long it lasts impact of the increased gas prices because of the disruption to the refineries. But it's not just the refineries. It's also Colonial Pipeline, one of the major arteries moving the fuel from the Gulf Coast, especially here in Atlanta. We're also seeing the spikes, and we also may be seeing shortages just as you're seeing in Texas. Looking back historically, that's actually been one of the biggest lingering economic impacts in terms of the overall U.S. economy from major storms that hit the Gulf Coast. In Katrina, the situation subtracted a couple of decimal points from GDP for a full quarter following the disaster because of how long it took for everything to get back in operation and get things to normal. And I vividly recall the shortages that we experienced in Atlanta during that time frame. There is one kind of positive to that my colleague Charlie Chesbrough brought up this morning. fuel efficiency is dramatically better in 2017 for the vehicles we have in operation compared to what existed back with Hurricane Katrina. So hopefully that will translate into at least what we've seen so far in the gasoline price increases, assuming it doesn't get much worse and it doesn't last for weeks, that it'll have a minimal impact on the typical household. But if we see those refineries and that pipeline continuing to face problems for days and weeks to come, we could be seeing something severely impacting not just Texas, but much of the areas that depend on the fuel that comes from the Gulf Coast.
And hey, I just want to clarify, I came onto the call a little late. Was it Alex speaking for the first question and then Jonathan for the second one?
This was Jonathan that was talking about the gas prices, and I mentioned a bit about the trucks. Alec may be able to add more now. Or Michelle on the trucks.
I think you got it covered, Jonathan.
Okay.
Great.
All right. Thank you all.
And once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. And our next question comes from Nick Zulovich from Auto Remarketing. Nick, your line is now open.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for the time this morning. Another quick clarification question, Jonathan. In your dollar figure damage estimates, you mentioned that it does not include new vehicle inventories at dealerships. Does that estimate also not include used vehicle inventories at dealerships as well?
No, the used vehicle inventory should be in that number because those vehicles are typically still titled and quote-unquote in operation. There may be a small number that might have been dropped that happened to be in transition or, you know, titled in one place and technically sitting in Houston when the storm occurred, but I think it's largely covered.
Okay, very good, very good. Thank you. And also, just Jonathan, what's your assessment of what the salvage auction activity has been like leading into this horrific storm in light of how insurance companies have been apt to write off vehicles because of the cost of repair and other factors? Just what's your assessment of what the salvage space activity already is like and just a thought or two about how much is going to intensify once these vehicles are processed and eventually disposed of through the salvage space?
Well, mostly I focus on the non-salvage part of the auction market because that's the heart of Manheim, and in fact all of the data and calculations we make on wholesale prices is explicitly paying attention to the non-salvage. But I can make some observations for that and then talk more broadly. There's no question if this is the biggest event in history in terms of the total volume of vehicles damaged, this is going to have lingering effects on the wholesale market for some period of time in terms of increased volumes that should be going to salvage and working their way through the system, but also in terms of the industry and consumers having to deal with their own due diligence in tracking vehicles that could have been damaged but didn't get properly identified as damaged and therefore salvaged vehicles. In terms of volumes, I can make some observations on the non-salvage side because we dug into what Manheim saw after previous hurricanes, and basically it behaved as you would expect. If you take a step back and think, okay, the disaster does two things simultaneously. It decreases supply, both in terms of what might have been on dealer lots in those locations, but also in terms of what would have been potential supply, cars that people might have been trading in or otherwise selling, that would make their way in the market. And at the same time, it increases demand because of suddenly those people needing to replace their vehicles in a very short period of time that otherwise would not have been remotely considering a vehicle purchase. And so what we observe is that you see a break in the pattern in terms of if there had been continued growth in supply in the wholesale channel, you suddenly in the non-salvage see flat or declining volumes for a couple of months. And related to that, you typically see price strength. which makes complete sense. If there's tighter supply and stronger demand, that would amplify prices for 2 to 3 months following the storm. And, of course, if you've been tracking, we've been following that wholesale prices have been really strong for the last 3 months, and the indicator we chatted about in mid-August for the Manheim Index said that trend was continuing. So that means that wholesale prices are very likely to be strong through the end of the year. Before, I was sort of on the fence on whether or not that trend could continue indefinitely or would it reach a place and plateau. Now, with this effect on supplies, it's likely to be to remain at least as strong as we've been seeing through the end of the year.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you for all that observations, Jonathan. And for either Michelle or Alec, referencing one of the points that Jonathan just made, in light of a disaster of this magnitude, how does perhaps shopper behavior change or become modified, that crossovers and SUVs have been so popular, that maybe in light of this situation that consumers will be looking to get any type of vehicle they can afford if theirs has been damaged in the storm? If either of you would like to take a stab on how shopper behavior might be modified in light of just seeking transportation.
Well, I would just say, first of all, it is a major truck market, as Jonathan mentioned, and we know there is tremendous loyalty in the truck segments. Similarly, sport utility vehicles are obviously very popular, and we also see a tremendous loyalty there to the segments, not necessarily to the brand, but to the segments, and we know that they're also aspirational. We see continued, actually, the shopping on Kelley Blue Book and Auto Trader have been kind of ahead of the curve in terms of shopping for sport utilities vehicles, and you know, we've seen that trend increase more than we have even the sales just yet, which gives us indication that that will continue. You know, I think affordability is going to be an issue. These people, poor people, are going to be challenged financially if they've lost homes and don't have insurance and they've lost their cars. So I think that's something we'll have to watch carefully.
Yeah, just to add one point to Michelle's comment, because I think she's spot on ultimately. You know, you look at the overall preferences in that area, and I agree, it's going to lean heavily towards trucks and compact utility, but I think what Michelle mentioned is critical in terms of affordability, because, you know, these are folks that are looking to get back on the road as quickly as possible so they can put their lives back together so that they can get to their work if it wasn't impacted. And in that sense, that's where you're likely going to see localized pressure on overall prices across all segments, right? You're going to see, as Jonathan pointed out, an increase in demand, a decline in supply. That's going to put price pressure any way you slice it. You know that demand is going to be heavily driven towards trucks and sport utilities, so that's where it's going to be the most pronounced. Now, with that said, if you look at overall days in inventory and you look at where there are opportunities for affordable purchases, this is where you could see a bit of a bounce up locally in some of the mid-sized sedan segments, even the compact sedan segments, because these are affordable, basic transportation, feature-rich vehicles, where in some cases you still have, heading into this, you know, across the U.S. looking at new cars, a 90-day-plus days in inventory for your typical midsize sedan. Subcompact cars are close to 100 days in terms of days in inventory. So you might see some folks opting to potentially augment or switch their preferences in terms of seeking an affordable unit. So I'd keep an eye on some of those high inventory, highly available segments as well, where you could see a bit of a bounce back, at least locally in those regions.
And we could see some manufacturer incentives. We're already seeing some programs come out by automakers. I would add the other pressure point for affordability is in that used car between 4 and 8 years old. We know there's a lot of the nearly new coming off lease, but the ones a bit older than that are much more affordable, they're in much tighter inventory. So.
Yeah, that's right, Michelle. There's 20 million less in the category of 4 to 8 years old compared to those younger than 4 years in the market.
Very good, very good. Well, thank you so much for the data analysis, everyone. Have a great holiday weekend. Thank you.
You too.
And once again, if you have a question, please press star 1. I'm showing no additional questions at this time, and I would now like to turn the call over back to Ms. Bihar for closing remarks.
Great. Keep an eye out for next month's call-in details. If you need anything else, please feel free to reach out to the public relations team, and we will be happy to help. Thank you all for joining, and have a great day and holiday weekend.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.